Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee! The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You know what's going on. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. A whole lot to get into. Some big news, obviously, with the L'Jarius Sneed trade going through and the contract being set to be signed. They've agreed to terms. Got free agency coming kind of to a close, the initial part of it, as we know. It's going to continue on through into June even. So we'll get into that. The draft is coming up. I want to look at some options at number 7. So I'll definitely get into that in that final segment. So stay tuned for that. Run TMC with Chris Sanders. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but regardless, it's going to be a good conversation because that's just how that thing goes. In the meantime, we got David James.
Yes, sir.
Man, I tell you what. You look at what the Titans have done, and they've managed to really reverse course when you talk about a team that has put themselves in a position to be competitive. And I know, and we'll get into it in the final segment, there's a lot that has to be still done. As Jarrett Stillman will say, they don't have a right tackle. He is correct. They don't have a definitive right tackle. Brian Callahan came out and he spoke about options there. And we know at 7, left tackle is a very good possibility. But again, we'll get into that later. I think what we need to initially focus on is what happened in the meantime. And that move to get L'Jarius Sneed, I think, was a masterclass by Rand Carthon, Chad Brinker, Bill Callahan, the whole crew in holding their water. They knew all along that they wanted L'Jarius Sneed. This is something that we've talked about as far as them having a desire, but there was a price where they wanted him at. There was a price where they wanted him at contract-wise, a price where they wanted him at compensation-wise, as far as what they had to give up. They were not giving up a pick in this year's draft. That was the thing that they wanted to stay away from. Now, this would be the second year in a row where they've traded away a third-round pick for the following season. Next year, that's something they're going to have to try to work to get back, just like they're going to have to try to work and get it back this year. But the objective is to bring in productive players that match your scheme and that are impact players, and make no mistake about it, L'Jarius Sneed is just that. I liken this to a situation when you go in to buy a car. You have your mindset, okay, look, I did the research. This is the car I want. This is the price I'm paying. I'm not going to go above this price right here. So you test drive it. You fall in love with it. The salesman is telling you all the good stuff about it. And you're like, hey, this is the number. So you know the game, the back and forth, right? So he goes to the back room, talks to the sales manager, and comes back. Well, you know, this is the best deal that we could do. And it's higher than the number you told him was the limit. So what happens? You get up and you get ready to walk away. And what does the salesperson do? Wait. Let me just see. Hold on one second. Hold on. I'll be right back.
Let me crunch the numbers.
Exactly. And he goes back to the sales manager and comes back and he's like, okay, we can meet that. You're like, okay, cool. We got a deal. That's what happened in this situation. Now, you had a few other teams, the Colts, the Vikings, were interested. They poked around. Look, all along, the Titans were the team that was most interested. And I know from talking to sources that there was just parameters within the deal. So once it got into striking distance, that deal was made. And I think getting Sneed at $19.6 million as opposed to the $22 million, and we had this conversation. We said, hey, look, I don't make L'Jarius Sneed the highest paid corner in the league. I don't do that. Is he on a similar par with some of the highest paid corners, whether it's Marshawn Lattimore, Jaire Alexander, who's leading it? I would say yes. I would. 19.6 is a great deal. It comes in just a little bit below Jalen Johnson, who was coincidentally in that same draft. He's 25. Sneed is 27. Okay. The guaranteed money is a little bit higher. Great job, Vin Marino. Great job, everyone there in that front office in getting the deal done. But now the question that the deal is it's been agreed to and everything is the fit. Well, Denard Wilson, he talked about some of the features that he wants in a defensive back. I asked him, you know, about the versatility aspect. You know, considering so many teams are using so much 11 personnel, three receivers, you got to have versatility. Here's what Denard Wilson had to say when I asked him about the versatility and just, you know, how you have to approach the secondary.
It's the more you can do, right? When you draft players, you know, you don't want to peg a player in one position. The more you can do to help the team become versatile, like you can have a corner that, you know, he brings a different aspect and he can line up in nickel and he's a good blitzer. He can line up in a slot, right? This is a matchup game as well. You know, there's so many great receivers in this game and the game is spread wide open. You want to have people that's versatile, right, to play numerous positions, to line up, to be able to adjust and adapt to what you're getting from the offense.
And then on top of that, like this organization, they've struggled to develop the DB position. You look at guys you work with, you know, Jamal Adams, Hamilton, Bradbury. And what has been the key for you to be able to get the max out of these talented players?
Well, I live by these three principles as a coach. As a coach, you must be able to teach, motivate, and inspire. And any player that I've ever been around, the first thing I'm going to do, I pride myself on being a hell of a teacher. I'm going to motivate them to be better than what they think they should be or reach the potential they're supposed to. And I'm going to inspire them to go get it. And the coaches that we have on the staff, they have the same mantra. They believe in the same thing. So when we get a player, whether we in free agency or in the draft, those are our guys. And we want to do everything we can in our power to teach, motivate, and inspire them to maximize their potential and go out there and have success.
Boy, feel the energy right there. You could feel it. It's funny. I remember that press conference looking at Brian Callahan when Denard Wilson said that as far as teaching, motivating, and inspiring. And, man, he did one of those like you could tell, like that was, he wanted to run through a wall. But more importantly, the reason why I brought that up at the first half of that quote, and also remember, Denard Wilson said that he wanted to be aggressive and blitz, but not do so recklessly and have coverage behind it. Typically, when you blitz, I mean, you'll see some zone, you will. But a lot of times when you blitz, it's that mano a mano. It's me and you. That type of coverage. And everything that Denard Wilson said in that first part of the quote, that, folks, that's Legarius Sneed. He's a versatile player that could play left or right and in a nickel. Low-key, something that no one is talking about. He's a tremendous blitzer. They sent him on corner blitzes multiple times. He got home. When you look at free agent or trade target and match to organization, this one right here is tremendous, folks. It's actually better than I thought it was, to tell you the truth. Because as I dug more and more into the Jerry Snead, one thing that I saw, it wasn't just left and right corner that he was traveling with the A.J. Browns, with the Stephon Diggs, with the Keenan Allens, with the Justin Jeffersons, with the Jamar Chases. Oh, we could go on. But here's the thing. None of those guys had 100 yards receiving. In fact, A.J. Brown had one reception for 6 yards. Jamar Chase wanted to fight. Look, and you know what I say, David, about corners that make you want to fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's a compliment.
Yes, it is.
So not only did he travel from left to right with them, he was lining up against them in the nickel, in the slot. That is a match. And then also you talk about the aggressiveness. He wants to get up there. You saw the Tyreek Hill clips. You saw the clips of he and Calvin Ridley going at it. There are others. He likes to press. Like, that dude likes, he wants to jam you at the line of scrimmage. He wants to tell you, like, hey, look, man, ain't nothing sweet here. Nothing sweet. Then the thing that I love about this dude that really it stands out is just the willingness, the want to, the desire to go against the opposing team's lead receiver. It wasn't something that Steve Spagnuolo went to him and asked him to do. It was something he went to Steve Spagnuolo to do. He said, hey, look, before this season started, you know, and he spoke on it a bit, you know, before this season started, he went to Spagnuolo and said, I want to face the opposing team's top receiver. It's a mindset. It's a mentality. This is what Snead said at the Super Bowl when he was asked about the mindset that it takes to be a shutdown corner and take on the opposing team's top receiver.
I can say Spaz put me in the right position to shut him down, and also mentality, you know, just go in and just have a mindset that nobody's going to catch a ball on you. You know, if they do catch a ball on you, let's play. And that's the mentality I've been having all season, and it worked in my favor. I love it. It brings like it wakes up an animal in me. You know, I just can't tame it once I be aggressive. Yeah.
That's it right there. I love it. It brings out an animal in me. That's what you want from corners. Folks, if you look at the top level corners in this league, they all have a degree of jerk, cockiness, arrogance to them. Jalen Ramsey, you already know, right? Jair Alexander, my favorite corner. Well, he chippier than a little bit. And it goes on and on. You know, and I think Snead, he just showed you that he has that mindset too. But as he mentioned, it takes your coaching staff having confidence in you to be able to do this, to get the opportunities to do that. So it's only right we get Steve Spagnuolo's take on all this because, I mean, this is a guy who you've seen him just kind of evolve under, right? I mean, going from a fourth-round pick, pick number 138, to $55 million guaranteed. Here's Spagnuolo.
Proud papa when you see that. I mean, that was – that's him. Like, he has a unique, talking about LJ, he just has a unique knack of the timing. I mean, you brought the point up. That may be the toughest guy in the league to press and do that. But he happened to catch him really good. And I think Tua was looking over there, so it took him somewhere else. And did we get a sack on it? Did he throw it away? Or?
It was a sack.
I think George might have got it. And that's a piece that, like, you saw it because it was so dynamic. But there are other plays like that where he might just ride him out. We don't really see it. We see the sack. But that's what we call hidden production. I mean, that's hidden production for us, what LJ did. I'll be watching it again sometime, somewhere.
I love what he said, David, about hidden production. And this is something we used to talk about a lot with Jeffrey Simmons, right? A batted ball or a pressure that led to an interception. Well, look, man, Warren Sapp would tell you that the front end dictates what happens on the back end. But Deion Sanders will push back and say, hey, look, man, the back end, we dictate what happens in the front end. Look, it's a chicken and an egg thing, but the fact of the matter is you need both. But I think in this case, what Steve Spagnuolo hinted on was how the back end could help the front end, right? And you don't always see it, right? And this was in regards to the way that he jammed up Tyreek Hill. And we know Tyreek Hill, typically, that was the first read in the progression. And he jammed him up, and he caused Tua to have to go elsewhere. And these are things you see happen, right? A corner is doing a really good job in coverage. Or even you could just rewind it back to what we talked about with the blitz, right? The aggressively blitzing with coverage behind it. When you send an extra defender, an extra rusher, that triggers something in the quarterback's mind. Oh, I got to get this ball out quicker. But guess what happens if there's a physical conversation going on at the line of scrimmage between Legarius Sneed and the receiver. The timing is messed up. So you got the quarterback like, oh, I got to get this out. And then he looks over and he sees his receiver having a whole lot of chatter at the line because 38 got his hands in his chest. That helps the front end, the rush, get home. So I know there's a lot of concern, rightfully so, about the pass rush. When you take DeNico Autry out of the picture, and his 11 sacks go to Houston. But this is one way that you could kind of offset it. So I think when you look at this move, it's really good. And you talk about the hidden production. It doesn't always show, like, in the stat sheet. And so I've had people say, hey, you know, this guy hasn't even made a Pro Bowl. He's not an All-Pro. That's fine. Here's his DB coach, previous one, because his DB coach now is Chris Harris. But here's his previous DB coach, Dave Merritt, who was with the Chiefs. This is what he had to say on the Jerry Sneed's Pro Bowl snub.
And decided that he wasn't good enough to make the Pro Bowl. I know if I was a defensive coordinator, he's one of the first guys that I'm going to come and grab because he's probably one of the more complete corners that I've ever been around in my building as far as when it comes to tackling as well as coverage. So I just told LJ, even last night, that, hey, no matter what happens, just always stay humble, stay hungry, and, you know, stay positive and stay prayed up because, hey, your time will come. And he's the type of young man that he's not going to put the spotlight on himself. And that could be one of the reasons why, because he's not flashy or flamboyant. He kind of does his job and goes up under the radar.
So there you have it right there, right? You know, the stats aren't always going to show, but he said if I was a defensive coordinator, he's one of the guys that I would call. I thought it was cool how he mentioned the whole part about being a complete corner. And this last season that he had, and just to kind of put things in perspective, David, do you know the last cornerback? I wouldn't be able to guess this because I would have forgotten, but it hasn't been that long ago. But do you know the last cornerback to win Defensive Player of the Year?
Not on the top of my mind, no.
Yeah, most people would. Yeah, and it's cool. Stephon Gilmore, he won it in 2019. Now, the thing that's interesting about that, and numbers, like you could put stats together to show a lot of different arguments, but that year, Stephon Gilmore was targeted 96 times and didn't allow a touchdown. This past year, Sneed was targeted 90 times and didn't allow a touchdown. So that was the most times he was the nearest defender. And this is per ESPN stats and info. That was the most time, the 90 times he was the nearest defender in coverage. And again, like that's the most since 2019 without allowing a touchdown pass. You want some other numbers? 50% completion percentage, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And this is an area the Titans, like, they desperately need it because teams targeted in the Titans secondary, 69% completion percentage. Their touchdown to interception ratio allowed was dead last in the league. 15 touchdowns to 3 interceptions. Again, Sneed 0 to 2. How does this match? Well, it shows you right there. You got the guy who had the best coming to the team that had the worst. This is a really good move for this Titans team. Now it's just going to be about finding a way to manage this knee situation, whatever it may be, because he passed the physical, but also finding a way to get him comfortable in scheme. And I think when you look at Denard Wilson, he's a really good coach. And really good coaches do what? They figure out what players do well, and they give them the freedom to do it. That's it. So there's what I have to say about LeJarius Sneed. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back with Run TMC.
I want to tell you a little bit about Soho Footwear over there in Hendersonville. You need your sneaks, your J's, whatever you should need, man. Definitely make sure you go check them out. You mentioned TD10 and you get $10 off of $100. And they have a wide selection. So if you're a guy who or girl who already has a nice catalog of J's and Air Force Ones, et cetera, they'll still have something for you. Just go check them out. And if you're brand new to it, hey, just let them know. They'll guide you in the right direction. So definitely make sure you check out Soho, S-O-H-O, 615.com. And again, they're in Hendersonville.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. The music fades. The lights dim. And now, coming to you live from Houston, Texas. Starting at power forward for your Houston Rockets at 6'10", from the University of Providence, number 33, Otis Thorpe.
And now, starting for the Houston Rockets, oldie but goodie, Ralph Sampson.
Do I have to tell the story about when
please
I wore the
do
Ralph Sampson, Ralph Sampson Pumas to school again?
Pumas?
Ralph Sampson had his own Pumas. And at that time when it came out, I think it was like 87 or 88, dang, something.
You was like 2 years old, man. What are you talking about?
I was 12.
Okay, good.
They were too big for me, but I did it anyway.
Okay.
I wore my dad's Ralph Sampson Pumas to school. I got caught.
Oh, got you.
Got the whooping of my life. The only whooping, the only beating I got that was worse than that, is when I was 10 years old in 1986. Yes, I got caught. My mom caught me up after I was supposed to be in bed watching the 86 Mets game six against the Houston Astros. Man, it went 17. It went 17 innings. I was supposed to be in bed for school.
I just love this sports, man. But hold on. Can I reenact the spanking that you was going to get because you had on some Pumas? Hey, boy, come here. You got my Pumas on? I'm going to ask you again. Do you have my Pumas on? Can you just imagine the spanking? And you look like, what am I doing?
It was the worst.
Oh, that's so what's going on, man? You see this crazy stuff that the Titans are doing, man. Let me tell you something. Rand Carthon is balling, man.
Yeah, he's cooking. Ooh, man. He's cooking. It looks good right now. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So we'll just have to see how it transfers into the season. But, I mean, look, you well, on paper, sounding like Elmer Fudd. What you have on paper, it looks good, man. It looks good.
Man, I love the secondary, man, and I'm gonna tell you why. When I came in the league in 1995, I the best secondary that I ever went against. Well, I mean, we had some guys at that time. We had Deion Sanders and all those guys, and you had the guys from the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, mm-hmm. Dale Carter and Hastings. Those guys were good. But some of the best secondary that I went against was the guys in practice.
Huh.
You had Chris Dishman, you had Daryl Lewis, you had Blaine Bishop, you had Steve Jackson, the defensive back coach now for the Tennessee Titans. You got Marcus Robinson. Now you look at the secondary now for the Tennessee Titans. You got Snead. You got, I can't pronounce the name. How do I pronounce the name?
Oh, Chidobe Awuzie.
Awuzie. Him, and then you got McCrary, who's a fighter. You got Hooker, yeah. You got Elijah Molden. And then you look at the situation, how Denard Wilson wants to play, the defensive coordinator for Tennessee Titans. What did he say? He wants aggressive, physical, and guys that's ready to fight every play. Look at those guys that we just named.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I opened up this show with. Yeah. Was talking about the match there, and it's funny you talk about fighting, right? Look, did you see the Bengals game, Chiefs Bengals?
Absolutely.
Jamar Chase was in his feelings, man.
No, did you see him choke Tyreek Hill?
Oh, you talk? Yeah. Hey, listen, and that's the thing about this guy.
Yes.
You can say, "Oh, did you see him go against?" And listen, you know, I take it a little personal.
Absolutely.
Did you see him go against AJ Brown?
Like, it breaks off him.
It's impressive.
It's impressive. Yeah, and he has an attitude. And the guy he reminds me of, I don't know if a lot of Tennessee Titans remember Chris Dishman, but when I first got in the league, that's a guy who mentored me. Every day in one-on-one, he would say, he wouldn't call me Chris. He'd say, Ohio State, come out. And the thing about it is, he would fight me at the line of scrimmage. He would fight me if I'm running the post. He would fight me contesting the pass. And those are the guys that you want because you have Snead, you have McCrary, you got Hooker, all those guys who love to fight. You don't think that's going to carry over in the game? And then also, did you see what Jeffrey Simmons said? He was cheering, we got a secondary. That's no disrespect to anybody else. He said, we got a tough secondary. That's going to make everybody's life better.
Yeah, I mean, help me help you. Let's get into that a little bit because that's something I spoke of last segment as well, is just how everybody thinks the pass rush is like, you got to have it. And you're right, you do have to have it. And they say, hey, the front end dictates the back end, but, you know, the back end also dictates the front end. From your perspective, how does that work?
You know, we always hear this term, and coaches always use this term, and it sounds cliche. Everybody has to do their job. Because if you have a situation to where, say, they're in man-to-man coverage, you know, Jeffrey Simmons is getting to the quarterback, Landry's getting to the quarterback, the guys are getting to the quarterback. But if you have a secondary guy that's not a cover guy, and the quarterback just throws the ball up and the guy makes a touchdown, even though you got to the quarterback, you got one guy that doesn't do his job. So if you have the whole 11 guys doing the job, you have the front that's getting at the quarterback, you're getting the quarterback off a spot, and he makes a mistake, he throws the ball up, and then you have sticky coverage in the back end with Snead and McCrary and those guys that are really, really covering people, it just makes everybody's life better because everybody's doing their job.
And that's the key thing, doing the job. Tell me, because you've been in this situation, right? You see the defense has a blitz on, and the corner comes up and puts you in the choke hold. What does that do to the quarterback?
He ain't throwing it to you no more.
He's coming right off it, huh?
He's going to come off it because you got to remember that if he's getting blitzed, he's got to get off the ball quick. I mean, the receiver's got to get off the ball quick. He can't do a lot of things at the line of scrimmage. He's got to get open. And as a quarterback, if I see you getting choked out there, I'm going to give you another chance. I'm like, hey, dude, you got to get off the press. But if you get choked again, then I got to go to my second and third read. But the thing about it is, as a receiver, you know, I remember we were playing the Cincinnati Bengals in 1995. And I'm a rookie. This is my second game of the year. We're playing the Cincinnati Bengals. And they had an all-out blitz. And it wasn't even called. We didn't have a side adjust. When I say side adjust, you come off the route. Chris Chandler just gave me a look like, all these cats are coming. You got to get open. I aborted my route. You know, got off the spot, touchdown, for a 46-yard touchdown. Why? Because he did his job, and I got off the press, and I beat the press coverage.
Was that the one against Ashley Ambrose?
Yeah, no, that was Brim. It was against Brim.
Okay, because I know there was, I think it was Ashley Ambrose.
No, Ashley Ambrose was with the Denver Broncos who I beat the brakes off of.
Oh, so you got him when he was with the Broncos. Yeah. I know he started off with the Bengals.
Yes.
That's pretty cool how you opened up about that, you know, and a lot of times people don't understand, like, how much freelancing goes on, huh?
Oh, my gosh. You know, but here's the thing: you got to be on the same page, and that's got to be the key. You can't. It's a little freelancing, but still, you got to know your players. I'm gonna give you a perfect example. I know I'm giving a lot of stories, but I remember 1999. I was on our way to the Super Bowl. I was playing Atlanta Falcons, and in the film room, me and Steve McNair was looking at. We're playing Atlanta Falcons, and we were looking at the safety blitz. He says it's a safety blitz. I don't care whatever route you have. I want you to ride a side adjust. A side adjust is if I have a comeback or a deeper route, I got to break it off and run a slant. So here's the deal: the play comes up. We're in a certain formation. The safety starts the blitz. Steve McNair didn't have to give me a hand signal. He just gave me a look like, you better watch this. So when we glanced eyes, we looked at each other. The safety blitz. I run a quick slant, catch the ball, and it's a touchdown. The reason why it worked is because me and Mac was on the same page, and beforehand we watched film to see what the safety was going to do.
Yeah, that's the importance of being together in the classroom. We're talking about safeties and them blitzing. What do you make of this Titans safety group? Are you of the belief that, okay, they don't have to draft one higher, they could go in with Amani Hooker and Elijah Molden, and then, you know, a collection? Matthew Jackson is an intriguing guy for me, but, I mean, the guys behind them.
Yeah, I mean, I still like Elijah Moore. I still like Hooker because if you look at a couple of years ago when they were playing the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, when they lost in the playoff game, but there's a play in the game that almost turned the tide. Who made the interception?
Hooker.
So he has the capability, but here's what's going to make Hooker and Elijah Moore better: Snead and Awuzie. Did I pronounce the name right?
Yeah.
Okay, Awuzie. With Snead and Awuzie, those guys are going to make up. Those guys are going to get better because of those guys are going to be locked down corners. So it makes their job easy to get a better read. Because just imagine, you got Snead and Awuzie locking people up in the perimeter. So now if they're locking people up on the perimeter, now you got a slot guy and he runs the seam. It makes the safety easy, his read even better because now he just got to cover that guy. So that's what's going to make those two corners they brought for the Tennessee Titans.
Any questions about their durability, though? We know these guys have missed time and pretty much every year they've been in the league.
That's a little concerning, but at the end of the day, I mean, you're taking a chance. I mean, anytime you bring a free agent in, you're taking a chance. And, you know, if a guy gets hurt, then, you know, it dampers everything. Just say, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but just imagine if those two guys get hurt. Then now you got to go get corners and then you lost a lot of money. So it is taking risks. It's like rolling dice. You got to take a chance. You may get the right number and you may not. But at the end of the day, you still have to take a chance because you're in this league. This is the passing league. You got to get some shutdown corners.
So how would you list the needs this team has remaining on their roster?
I would say, number one, I would say offensive line. We know that. I mean, we've been talking about that the last 5 years, the left tackle situation. So I think the guy that they may get, I mean, I know it sounds so easy, you know, Joe Alt from Notre Dame, but the guy that I like Mims from Georgia, big physical guy. I like him also. But I think that number one need is the offensive line. And then I still think you still need to maybe get a safety. I think so, and I kind of agree with you in that situation. And then also, I may say maybe get another tight end or even maybe another linebacker to kind of help that linebacking core.
So when you say linebacker, you're talking like inside backer.
Inside backer. Yes.
Yeah, I agree there. I agree with those. Safety is going to be intriguing as far as okay, what do you do? Do you because if you, the best one you're probably going to have to use pick 38, and the best one is Tyler Newbin out of Minnesota. But
well, he's a dog, man.
Yeah, that ball hawk, too. Ball hawk, man.
Yes, he is.
I'm curious how they approach that. Julian Blackman is a free agent from the Colts, I don't know why he hasn't gotten a contract, but he's someone I would look at signing. But I think they're going to hold tight and get a guy late in the draft. But that inside backer position, the green dot helmet, are you of the school where you're like, I don't know that I could give that job to a rookie, even if it's Peyton Wilson or Edge Cooper?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough because those are the guys that sets the front and make sure those guys are in a position. And one guy that I used to love watching playing the linebacker, which I don't know if you remember, he used to play with the Houston Oilers, was Burrow. You remember Burrow?
Mm-hmm.
Big physical guy.
Michael Barrow.
He was a great linebacker. He set the front. He told guys where to go. And when you're a rookie, you're just trying to find out where to line up. But you know what I'm saying?
It's so not how you going to tell others? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How you going to tell others if you're just trying to figure out how to make it work? But at the end of the day, whatever guy you bring in, he might be that special guy to where he picks up all that thing. Because the thing about it is, if he's having to worry about getting everybody lined up and he doesn't know how to line up, then how is he going to play fast? It's not about having a 4-3 and running a 4-4. Playing fast is not having that hesitation and playing full speed through the whistle. So how are you going to play full speed through the whistle if you have that second guess yourself? Or are they in the right front? Or am I in the right position? Let a veteran guy do that and let the rookie learn from the veteran so he can learn how to do that.
That's an awesome point. And I didn't even think about that because I'm sitting here like, oh, you know what? Peyton Wilson should be the, like, oh, if he, you might want to pick him. But then to your point, how are you going to tell everybody else where to go where you're still? And that's a lot to think about. You're not going to be able to play fast.
Yeah.
Well,
it
looks like Dr. Gibby is the real quick left tackle, though, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's talk of J.C. Latham at 7.
Love
in fact, Mike Tannenbaum had him at 7 in his latest mock with Alt going to the Chargers at 5.
Mm-hmm.
How are you looking at drafting a right tackle at 7, and if so, what would you do at left?
You know, you got to get somebody. And if Joe Alt is not there, we talking about the guy Latham from Alabama, but also you got Mims from Georgia. But don't forget about the cat from Penn State, Fasciano, if I pronounce his name right.
Yeah.
Fasciano. Yeah, sorry about crushing his
Fasciano,
name.
Fasciano,
but from him from Penn State. But a lot of people have been down on him because, you know, the situation that's been going on, you know, him not, you know, out of shape and all that stuff like that. But I just think that you got to get somebody that's an impact player. You can't just get another guy that just comes in and just, okay, I'm just a guy. He's got to come in and play right away because you got to protect Will Levis. So, you know, you got Alt, you got, you know, even the guy from, you know, Oregon State. These names are killing me.
Talis Fuaga.
Fuaga. I'm just terrible. But you saw him crushing his name. But those guys like that. But those are the top five guys that we're talking about. But one of those guys are going to be there. So I think you got to take a chance on one of those dudes.
It's going to be really interesting, and that's what I'm going to get into in this next segment, the different options at 7 and different ways that they could go. So, yeah, that's going to be something, man. That's definitely going to be something. I know you got a story, so I'm going to go ahead and give the mic to you.
You got it. I got one in the chamber. You first.
Hey, listen, I'm chilling this week.
Man, okay, guess what, man? Me and my wife, you know, we're beautiful. We were watching TV. You know, we're just eating some dinner, just, you know, having a nice little candlelight dinner. Then this guy gets on TV and he starts singing Good Golly, Miss Molly. He was like, baby, I did not know that TD could sing. I said, baby, but that's not TD. That's Little Richard, man.
This is Peter Skoronski, and I'm talking with TD. The choice is yours.
You can get with this, or you can get with that. You can get with this, or you can get with that. You can get with this.
All right, back from the break. Talking with TD, man. We're going to keep this thing rolling. We just took a deep dive into the secondary. But, you know, there's more than just the secondary on the defense, on this team overall. And I think you look at this Titans team with the seventh overall pick for now, right? Rand Carthon said that it's nosy season. But nobody has really been feeling around about that pick. So, for now, they are at seven. But I think, you know, you look at the options. There's a lot of ways that they could go. Malik Nabers, man, it's this dude at pro day, 4.35 40.
That's
he had his get somewhere shoes on. I love what Jordan Reed from ESPN said about Nabers. He said it looks like he's playing football with a jetpack on, and that's definitely true. I tell you what, that was a great analogy. But you got him and his 10.9 broad jump, his 42-inch vertical. The explosiveness is clearly there in measurables as well as what you're seeing on the field. I think he's probably going to be gone, but it's interesting because, I mean, look, you got four quarterbacks that could possibly go in the top eight. You know, so you got that, and then you got Marvin Harrison Jr. I think Marvin Harrison Jr., him being available, trumps everything else the Titans would do.
Agree.
I think if he's on the board, they're picking him.
Have to.
Unless they get some type of crazy – like the Vikings say, hey, 11-23 and
agree.
One next year or something like that. I think it's not likely that he falls to seven. Roma Dunze, probably not. I think Dallas Turner is a guy that has to be in consideration. And when you look at this team, obviously there's a lot of needs on offense. There's a lot of needs on defense. You got Harold Landry and Arden Key, who are solid players. They're not getting any younger. At some point, you're going to need somebody to come in and rotate. At the very least, be a situational guy, right? And Dallas Turner, I mean, he's one of the top rushers. If it's not him, you know, Jarrett Verse, a lot of people allow to, you know. I probably wouldn't go that route, but if you want to make the defense better immediately, that's one way you could go. We know the conversation about Joe Alt, but I'm curious – Joe Alt may not be there at seven. In fact, Mike Tannenbaum in his draft and what he did, his mock, he didn't have Alt there at seven. He had a few other players there. But the other thing that you have to look at, and this is something that's interesting to me, is Brock Bowers. And I don't know for sure if the Titans would go there at seven. I don't know. But he's definitely a player to consider. This is what Mike Tannenbaum had to say, though, former GM of the Dolphins as well. He's the one, actually, he signed Ryan Tannehill to a long-term deal, but also he was with the Jets. And this is what he had to say about Brock Bowers. This is very interesting. Listen.
I think the biggest thing is, like, how, like, you know, most of my career guys, like, I work with defensive guys from Parcells, Belichick, Rex Ryan, Mangini. So a lot of my, like, thoughts are, like, influenced with what I'm about to say. So I think the problem with Bowers is this. If those guys were on this call, I would tell you, like, if not all, the majority of them would say, hey, we're just going to treat him like a receiver. Like, we're going to treat him as, like, we're going nickel. We're not going to worry about him blocking. So he's really more of a receiver than he is somebody that could displace people at the line of scrimmage. And that's, like, again, he's a great player. I love him in the red zone like everybody else, but that really would be the thinking is, like, we had a guy in Miami, Mike Gesicki, who was, like, an above-the-rim player, could really attack the ball, and, you know, he just signed with Cincinnati. But he really struggles blocking. That really changes things. Like, you know, we may call him in the media, like, a tight end, but if we're game planning, they're really not. Like, they're just another receiver, like a good receiver. I don't mean to minimize their ability, but when you say, like, why is Brock Bowers not in the top five or the top 10, that would be, and if I was representing Brock Bowers or trying to give him best advice, I would have told him 2 years ago, if you're like an above average tight end, you could be in the top, blocker, you'll be in the top five.
See, you never discount the importance of being a complete player. The Mike Gesicki reference was really intriguing to me, and that opened my eyes. I said, oh, wait a minute. Because I remember Gesicki coming out like, this dude could have been in the NBA dunk contest. And he was, if I'm not mistaken, a really top level volleyball players, clearly an athlete, you know, doing the things, but was he really equivalent, give you the production of a first round pick? And they gave him every chance to. I don't know that he did. And obviously he's not even there in Miami anymore. So that's a good point there. But, you know, it keeps going back to blocking. And one position that provides you the blocking is the offensive line. And as you know, they always say it all starts in the trenches. Here's Jim Harbaugh. And as a former quarterback, you would think that he wants to get in there and throw the ball around. But if you follow his career, you know, Stanford, even before the San Diego, Stanford with the 49ers and then with Michigan, he's always wanted to run it. This is Harbaugh on the importance of the offensive line.
The offensive line to me is important. I mean, if I ask you the question of, like, what position group depends on no other position group to be good, but every other position group depends on them to be good, you know, what position group is that? Offensive line. They're not relying on any other position group to be good. They go out and they're good. But yet every other position group relies on the offensive line to be good. And then the D-line, they'll be the ones that argue back, we don't need the offensive line to be good. Do you? Do you like when the offense has a 12-play drive? And, you know, the field position? You're right. You know, it's like, so yeah, that building that, you know, kind of offensive line, that's exciting. You know, can't wait to do that. April 2nd, let's get it started. Let's go. You know, so you feel ready to roll.
You got to love the enthusiasm there, right? Now it makes me have to say, an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. That's one of the things that his dad would always say. But this is a guy who in San Francisco, now they drafted Anthony Davis in the first round as a right tackle. That was before Harbaugh got there, but he leaned on that a lot. Now I'll push back just a little bit as far as the offensive line not relying on any other position for success, because sacks aren't always on the offensive line. You have the quarterback who may hold on to the ball too long. You have the quarterback who may run himself into sacks. You have the receivers who may not get open immediately. So I think it is a collective thing. You could have scheme where you're just in the wrong protection or you're dialed up the wrong play on 3rd and 15, etc. But to his point, the offensive line is of the utmost importance, and I think that's an understanding that you have to have. Now, for me, I'm not big on the right tackle versus left tackle debate. I think left tackle is important, probably a bit more important than the right tackle, but I'm not going to take away the importance of the right tackle. And that's where a guy like J.C. Latham comes into play. Now, there's some thought that he could flip to the other side and play left tackle. I personally wouldn't do it, but you look at what Bill Callahan has been a part of before, right? They've drafted right tackles and played them at left. I mean, they've drafted a right tackle in DeJuan Jones, and this dude became a starter and was a darn good one. DeJuan Jones, by the way, is a guy I thought the Titans really should have looked at last year. But, hey, look, you can't win them all. But here's Mike Tannenbaum a little bit more. Actually, let's go to J.C. Latham, because I talked about him flipping to the left side. This is what he has said at his pro day. Now, I'm not saying this means he's going to flip to the left side, but I thought this was intriguing what he had to say.
Have you talked to any of those coaches or scouts about your versatility, maybe slotting to the left or even slotting inside in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, you know, all of them talk about it. You know, I mean, they know who I am. So high school, played left at IMG. Freshman year, played guard at Alabama and then right tackle. So, you know, there's versatility within that. You know, I'm 6'6", 340. So, you know, I have the size to play inside. I have the athleticism to play outside. So, I mean, I can play center, you know, if it ever came down to it. So, you know, I mean, we all talked about it and discussed it. So,
look, I thought it was really interesting that he said left tackle, guard, and center. I mean, I think if you're spending a 7 overall pick, you want this guy to play a specific position. But he did say that he played left tackle. So it's not something that would be totally foreign to him. That is something to keep in mind. But you know who does play left tackle now? And that's Olufashinu. And I thought, you know, he was closer to Joe Alt than anybody, but you see the separation going, and Fashanu has actually, you know, fallen on different boards for whatever reason. I know he had the injury there at the combine. You got the 8.5-inch hands that's coming out. That Ohio State tape was not good. I remember when Calvin Ridley spoke in front of the – when we first got to meet him at his presser, before that I was watching Olu versus Ohio State, and I said, Terry McCormick, Terry, come over here, watch this. What do you think of that? He was like, oh, that's not good. I said, okay, next play. What do you think of that? Oh, that's not good. So I don't know. We'll see. If he's the option at 7, obviously knowing that Callahan is there and there's a lot to work with, I think that is an exciting thing for this team. But they need to consider J.C. Latham if he's there as well. Here's Mike Tannehill on the J.C. Latham versus Olu Fashanu. And mind you, he had the Titans taking Latham at 7.
Yeah, I like them both. I think it's a pretty fair statement. You know, Olu Fashanu, he was from the D.C. area. Really, like, ideal size. He didn't play great in the Ohio State game, but I think he's a plug-and-play player from day one. I think if you could clean up a couple things about Latham's game, you could be getting somebody that has, like, rare ability to displace somebody. And I think Fashanu has that ability. I just thought Latham did it a little bit more consistently. But, like, if you said that they drafted Fashanu, like, that makes a lot of sense as well. I don't think there's a lot of difference between those two guys.
Maybe just a quick follow on that. Do you see Latham with the potential to move over to left, or is he definite right?
Yeah, I think he could move there. And, you know, again, I think the world of Bill Callahan, you know, those were two Callahans for the price of one. And, you know, it was interesting. I was surprised that Cleveland didn't try to get a draft choice from Bill Callahan, knowing how valuable he was to them. But I definitely think you could slide him over. And I'd be surprised if, you know, they didn't consider it. Again, like, my bigger concern with Latham is he had 17 penalties, which is a big number for college football.
So you have the penalties there. That is definitely an issue. And it's something that they'll have to figure out. Because, obviously, look, Dylan Raiden's got – he had a lot of penalties last year. So you don't want those, of course, because you look at how that kill drives. You know, they could be in a 2nd and 4 and you get a hold, and now a 2nd and 14. And next thing you know, it's a sack, or you try to run the ball, and it's 3rd and 12 or 3rd and 14, what have you. And now you just lost – you got behind the chains, and you just lost a series that you shouldn't have lost. So that is important to avoid those penalties. I tell you, if you're looking at just the options, though, right? So left tackle is clearly a need. The way I would rank it, as far as perfect situation for the Titans, Joe Alt is there and Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't. I think that's the ideal situation for them, because now you get your left tackle and you put him in, but I tell you, man, if Marvin Harrison Jr. is there and you can get Larry Fitzgerald 2.0, I mean, you got to do it. And I know people say, hey, well, wait a minute. They just signed Calvin Ridley. You got DeAndre Hopkins. And that's true. But these guys are both going to be, you know, Ridley's going to be 30. Hopkins is already in his 30s. They're not going to be here forever. And you look at Ridley's deal, it's essentially a 2 to 3 year deal. So if you could get Harrison Jr., and let him just grow with Levis over time, I think you're cooking with something. And that, if you want to turn around and trade Burks, you could do that. I would still hold on to Burks. But that is something that's important to look at. However, look, it's not likely that he's there at 7. Okay, let's just – it's not likely that Neighbors is there at 7. So we're going to look at realistic options, right? I think ideally it would be Joe Alt. I'm torn on J.C. Latham or Olu Fashanu. I'm going to go Fashion, and then Latham. And then after that, Dallas Turner. That's the order that I would go. Ideally, they find their left tackle. But if they don't find their left tackle, a guy maybe at 38 that might be there that could flip and play. I saw him do this at the Senior Bowl. And that's Tyler Guyton out of Oklahoma. Now, Mike Tannenbaum touched on him a little bit, but I wanted to play this just mainly because this was a very interesting nugget that he dropped about Andre Dillard. I felt that after last year, there was no way that they would keep him or bring him back. But here's what Tannenbaum had to say.
I thought cutting Andre Dillard was a surprise. I worked with Bill Callahan at the Jets, and I thought they would have kept Dillard. So that was a big surprise. And the reason I went with Latham is he had a lot of penalties. He had 17, which is too many for an offensive lineman. But I think Bill's a guy that really is going to be drilling fundamentals, and you can clean that up. I do like Guyton. I think Guyton's a little bit smoother and smaller than Latham. I think Latham is bigger and thicker.
So Latham is bigger and thicker than Guyton. There's no mistake in that, right? Guyton is 328. Latham is 340. But I tell you a guy who Tannenbaum actually compared Guyton to, and it makes me smile because I remember this guy for the Jets, and he was something special. That's the Brick of Shaw Ferguson. So, and remember, Tannenbaum, he drafted him. So, I wonder if Guyton would be there at 38. I don't know, but that's the beauty of this draft, of every draft. It's like so many different directions that the team could go. It's just fun to watch, and there's so much intrigue. So, we'll continue to discuss this. That's the show for this week, folks. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. Shout out to Chris Sanders coming on, David James.
Yes, sir.
We had a lot of audio, so good job there splicing it and bringing it in, man. There's a lot to talk from and decipher and sort through, so definitely good job with that. Good job for each of you for finding us, right? And definitely continue to rock with us. Search Talking with TD on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, wherever you get your fine listening materials. Search, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.